I'm Greg Collard, news director at WFAE, and this week, WFAE talks airport construction and frustration.
There's no parking. I mean, it's all limited. When I've been down before, all even long-term lots were full.
We'll talk education. Third grade reading results are coming in, and there's the arrest of three students on bullying charges. And the evolution of NASCAR pit crews.
The majority of our athletes have a collegiate or a professional background in sports. So if we're going to ask them to come in and train like professional athletes, we need to have a professional facility for them to train in.
As always, I'm joined by, well, not always, but as usual, I should say, I'm joined by Ben Bradford.
Yeah, sometimes you swap me out for whoever the hot item of the week is. Yeah, but I'm here today.
And also joining me, as always, I should say, because she's been here every time, never gets swapped out, Lisa Miller.
Hey.
I almost called you another name.
Well.
It goes for the course.
You got it right.
Those who don't know, I'm just terrible with names and have called swapped male, female names and just
called
just,
me Greg.
Yeah, I've called that's
which
yeah,
is his own name.
That's it's bad, but I eventually get it right.
Yeah, sometimes
I usually yeah. So, interesting things developing at the airport over parking going into the busy summer season. I know, Lisa, this is of interest to you in particular, but Tasneem Shama had a story this week that got into some of the shortages because of the construction going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I was at the airport last week and I hadn't been to the airport for a while, I guess, or for maybe, you know, a couple months or whatever. And I was really surprised at all the construction and how many lots it was shutting down. And, yeah, basically, it sounds like we started seeing tweets this week, thanks to Ben passing on some information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was happy to share.
Yeah, that you know, there's days where there's only one lot open, which is really tough.
Particularly as you're going through Memorial Day weekend.
Exactly.
It's coming up and summer coming up and everything.
Exactly. So we're talking about this in the newsroom and figuring out what's going on and finally ended up sending Tasneem down there to figure things out. But the thing that's really interesting to me is that, you know, basically they have 5,000 fewer parking spaces because they're building a garage that should accommodate 6,000 spaces, which doesn't seem like, for all the expense, it's that many more spaces. But the idea is that there should always be a parking lot open. But if there isn't, the backup plan, according to the airport, is that people can use the valet parking. Now, valet parking runs like $14 a day for
wow.
Business valet. I think curbside valet is something like $28. And meanwhile, there's an overflow lot that they sometimes open during, you know, real busy times. You pay a fat flat fee. But they aren't going to open that up until the valet is all, the valet spaces are all
filled. So forcing you to pay more money, basically.
Yeah, that's what it sounds.
When you're already inconvenienced.
That's what it sounds like. And for example, you know, when I was at the airport last weekend, we parked at Daly, and we would have been better off parking at long term because the bus ride was basically by all the long term lots as we came back to the parking space. So
one of the things about watching this, right, is that there's this larger context of that you've got a new guy running the airport mm-hmm. After having, you know, decades of someone else doing it. And of course, this is it's also within the context of Charlotte is known for its low price. That's sort of its calling card here, is that Charlotte is a low price airport. Not for us. It's a low price airport for the airlines. So the airlines pay very low enplanement fees, which means like basically their cost per passenger mm-hmm. is very low. And then meanwhile, you know, our former reporter Julie Rose did a story that looked at the, or did some stories that looked at the actual cost of tickets and everything. And Charlotte tends to be on the higher end for ticket costs. So within that context, it's interesting to see this airport kind of chaos. There's a lot of scrutiny of the management of the airport, more so than there's been in a very long time. It had been described as the former aviation director, Jerry Orr's kind of fiefdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got that. At the same time,
the Republic of Orville.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And at the same time, you know, really, I think that the argument that we're hearing coming out of the airport is that essentially, you know, the focus on keeping that low cost let things deteriorate. So, you know, one of the problems that they're having is the shuttle buses, that they don't have enough shuttle buses that actually operate. And so they've put in a bunch of orders for more shuttle buses.
Our shuttle bus was really rickety, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. What shuttle bus has not been rickety? It seems like they've always, I don't travel as much as you all, but wherever, it seems like they're always.
It would hit a bump and like there was a portion where I was standing that definitely felt not.
Sure. And they talk about tears in seats and those kind of things. And you know, the aviation memo about some of the parking struggles, not only is it about space, it's also about the number of shuttle buses that they actually have operating. They had three of them that did not have air conditioning on a nearly 90-degree day, but they were still running them because they just said, you know, that's the only thing we can do to keep these things going. So there's these sort of competing, I think, things to watch are, you know, does the airport start spending a lot more money? Does the management of it change from what's been a very rigid, very thrifty, very efficient from an airline standpoint? Does it switch from that? Or is it, you know, things are falling apart?
Thank you, Ben, for taking that from my gripes to the bigger picture.
Okay, well, on to other issues that you're that's more part of your beat, education. Third grade reading results are in, or they're coming in. What does it show in Mecklenburg County?
So I wanted to, I heard you introduce that in the intro, but I meant just the reading after the test.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were talking about the third grade. We talked about what we're going to discuss this week.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And some third grade reading results. You were in my office the other day talking about the number of students who appear to have past the third grade
reading
block. Well, why don't you go ahead and say that, by memory.
Sure, I have to remember what that was. I think it was like 60% or 70 or something like that.
Wait, so I'm
we don't know. We're just reporting.
So I'm clear. What is it that we're not talking about?
Do you want me to?
No, let's go. Well, let's go into what, you know, we've talked about the third grade reading law and whether or not how many students will be retained, or we'll have to go to these summer reading camps. And there were some figures in recently about the number of students. Mecklenburg County seems to be doing pretty well. I want to say that you had told me 70% had already passed, but I could be wrong.
I think it's about that.
You think she's now looking this up? This is how dedicated she was. She is to this.
Is that dedicated, or
is she like? I don't want to.
Or is it embarrassing?
Embarrassing. This is fun. This is live.
It is 71%.
It's 71%. See, I have a better memory than you. So I guess that was pretty good.
Yes. When you think of, you know, before we were hearing that maybe, you know, half of kids would be headed towards summer reading camp. Mm-hmm. And now because of, you know, some of the alternative assessments that teachers can use so that kids, it doesn't all lie on the mm-hmm. end of grade test. Yeah. I mean, 71% is a big difference from 50%.
There is another aspect of reading, but not related to the law. After EOGs, which, as we record this, they're underway today.
Which is end of grade assessments for those of us who do not have children in schools.
Yeah, all those final exams, all those standardized final exams, and all the grades, basically.
Students have the option of reading when they're done, and I guess that when they're finished taking these tests, and I guess that wasn't always the option before.
Yeah, it's up to the school. CMS says it's up to the school. But yes, there is now a state policy where if you finish early, you no longer have to slump over your desk and wait till everyone finishes, that you can read a novel or something that is not a textbook that has nothing to do with the test and class that you're taking. So that's new this year.
And this really struck you too as really interesting.
I remember sitting in school and finishing the test and then just having to sit there. And like the incentive was to go pick over your answers more. But no, you knew you were done. You didn't want to look at them anymore. I think that I would have really enjoyed that.
Were you one of these kids? You probably were one of these test takers who were always one of the first to finish. You seem like that type.
Really?
Am I wrong in that?
You know, I think that I had a good number that I finished early. It probably depended on the subject. I think that, you know, it probably is kind of a bell curve, right? If you are really prepared or you really haven't prepared, then you finish quick.
Well, another topic of discussion, we haven't really done a story on this yet, but it certainly sparked a little bit of discussion in one of our meetings this week, and I'll just play you a news clip before we start talking about it.
Tonight, these three students are out of jail after being arrested, accused of bullying. Police say they made their comments online about a fellow classmate at Huff High School. Eyewitness News reporter Paige Hansen is live for us tonight in Cornelius. And Paige, some of the students told you that cyberbullying is a big problem there.
Natalie, the students tell me it happened.
And so it goes. We've done a little bit of reporting in the past about the online bullying law, but it was interesting because this story to me is, for one, I mean, this, and that was from WSOC TV, by the way. The pictures of these three students were up on, were very prominent in this story. And they kept showing them, saying their names and everything. And you would have thought that they were, they committed some, not that bullying is good, get that disclaimer out there. It's bad. I'm anti-bully. Okay. But you would have thought they committed some major crime. I mean, this is like a over two minute, 10 second story about, and which is pretty long in TV.
Very long.
For TV newscasts. And yeah. You would have thought they, did something really, really heinous.
Well, I guess the thing that was really surprising to me, and yes, I've reported on cyberbullying when it goes, students to teachers. And, part of that law is cyberbullying when it's done on campus by students to other students. But I first looked at that and I thought, these kids were arrested and they went to jail. I don't know how long they spent in jail. But, what were they charged?
They had to post bail and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And, they were charged with a misdemeanor for bullying and harassing behavior. Mm-hmm. And that was under a law that went into effect last year that included the teacher cyberbullying. But, it's definitely that something that triggered a lot of discussion in our newsroom and something that –
And what
I'll be checking into.
And what they did allegedly is post a picture of a girl and according to this news report, made a comment about the girl's body shape. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly and they did it on school time, which is why they were able to, which is why they got in trouble and were arrested.
According to the law.
Yes. Yeah. If they did it on their own, I guess the police couldn't. I'm not sure. Could the police arrest them if they did this at home? They would.
I think if they did it at home, it would not fall under that law. Mm-hmm. So it's that it was on school property that this happened that they could be charged and arrested.
So I wonder. I guess you're going to be looking into this. How many people, kids, have been arrested under this law?
Yeah, I think back to when I was school, and bullying could get out of hand at some times, but to have the whole realm of the internet and, the ability to just reach all these kids, I see why this worries people a lot. But when you bring in criminal charges.
Mm-hmm. And if you show a pattern of this behavior, and it's not just online bullying apparent from the law, it's a pattern of
harassing behavior
or threatening behavior. So basically, if you say, if you flip someone off once, you're okay. But if you flip them off a couple times, you're going to get arrested in school. I mean, things like that happen all the time. And when I was in school, I didn't think anything of it. But
it certainly leaves a lot up for interpretation. So it will be interesting to see. How many kids have been charged under this? So
I did have a problem with how this is an ethical issue from a TV station, but there are people who have been charged with much more serious crimes that didn't get that much attention, and to have 17-year-olds plastered all over the news, even if they did do something that's bad for a misdemeanor like that, I was bothered by that. I think it was over the top.
Well, I think that's always the question, right? I mean, that's the whole kind of bullying debate. I mean, everybody agrees that bullying is bad. I think that, my experience, I think, reflects probably most of our experiences, which is just that, middle school and middle school probably especially, because I think eighth graders are just unholy terrors. And, and we remember navigating that jungle. And I think it's natural to want your children to not have to deal with some of those things. So there's a question of, all right, well, how do you do that? And there's, a lot of studies about the effects of bullying and so forth, and we know that it's a negative thing. So the question is, all right, well, how do you police that? And we live in an ever more litigious society. And so this is one of the outcroppings of it. And I just think that, what you're describing is sort of, one end of the spectrum, sort of an extreme case on one side. And then you hear about the extreme cases on the other side, people, bullied into and severely harmed or whatever. And so the question is just, you know, where do we strike that balance? And I'm not informed enough to have any kind of opinion on that.
Anything else on this topic before we go on to the next? Well, NASCAR, interesting story by our colleague Michael Tomczyk. He had an interesting story this week about NASCAR.
I love this story. It's one of those things. It's like such a cool, like you didn't know about it. It makes sense. And at the same time, it's totally crazy, which is NASCAR pit crews, as opposed to being these, oil-soaked mechanics. They are recruiting college and in some cases former professional athletes, just these real kind of athletic freaks, guys who aren't going to necessarily go on and play professional football, mm-hmm. for instance, but just have, massive speed and twitch reflexes and strength for their size. And they train them up to be the pit crew, to go in and change the tires and put gas back in the thing. And they got to jump over the wall really quickly, dodge other cars as they're coming in, get over there and put that on there. They have training camps. They have weight rooms. They have, they're doing full-on fitness. You got to go back and listen to that story. If you haven't heard it yet, you got to go listen to the story. There's some great sound just the cars themselves, but also, the coaches yelling, all right, time, all right, another lap, all right, lift that thing. All this kind of stuff. You're talking about they're hiring, NFL strength and conditioning coaches.
Yes.
And it makes perfect sense that they're going to do this because it's an athletic endeavor. But it's just something, first of all, that had never occurred to me.
And it sounds like it never occurred to anyone until this guy from Stanford football.
He describes himself as having snuck in kind of to one of these things. And he had no idea about cars. And he says in the piece, because I didn't have that background, I just looked at it as another athletic event.
It totally makes sense. But I wonder if you're a diehard NASCAR fan, I know this is more old school me talking. I mean, you for example, you like a lot of people like the old days when you had drivers who actually could work on cars and knew a lot about the engines and weren't. And is this kind of the same thing where it kind of takes away from the you're not getting the grease monkeys or the guys who really work on cars doing this anymore? It doesn't feel real as mm-hmm. real as it used to, or right. as authentic. That's
well,
the
I
word
think,
I'm
you
looking
know, I
for.
Mean, obviously, it's a professional sport, but every sport, I think, as they get as the more money comes in, you get more professionalized. These kind of things happen in the same way that we don't have NFL players, playing Iron Man, on both sides, playing both offense and defense. I mean, you just don't have that, except maybe in a couple of very limited cases. So how do you get just that little bit of an edge?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it makes sense. Yeah,
I think at the same time, you've still got obviously, the guys, the work on the cars happening beforehand, right? I mean, the idea of getting this car fine tuned.
But I mean, I feel, when you talk about authenticity, maybe with NASCAR, especially now, I mean, a lot of people have that in the forefront of their minds as, it's grown so quickly and it's all televised and, there's this and that.
Well, it hasn't been growing lately, really. I mean, it was going down.
Not lately, but yes, exactly. It's been tailing off. But I mean, in the 90s, for example,
It was exploding.
You always hear Humpy Wheeler talking about how inauthentic he thinks it is now. So
whether you think that it is, impacting the authenticity of the sport, or you just think it's like a cool athletic endeavor, or you don't care about racing at all, definitely go listen to it. It's totally cool.
It's cool. It is cool.
Yeah.
And
agreed.
So Michael and he worked. Yeah. Great reporter, did a great job on that, and I think I've heard a little bit about this this trend, but I think that's clearly the best story I've heard on it. So great job by you, Michael, if you're listening. And on that note, that's another WFA Talks.
Cool. Thanks.